there was, instead of hopelessness, there was a kind of strength and defiance, a willingness to speak out, to say exactly what they thought, and so on. All of the men that we saw, all of the men in the cages, claimed that they could not stand up, and their legs were shriveled. After someone, for example, someone breaks a leg, you know, and you put a cast on the leg, you know, afterwards, when the cast is removed, you know, and the leg has not been used, it is much smaller, and the flesh becomes much different. And they would pick up their legs and shake them, and you would see that, and the flesh would just sort of shake back and forth. There was no apparent muscle in their legs, and their legs were out of proportion to the rest of the body. So that the, this was another, well anyway, this was what we saw. We saw people were malnourished, people had scars on their body, people claimed that they were not getting enough food to eat, which could be judged by the malnourishment. It was very obvious that the lime was being thrown down on them by the fact that there was lime on several of the floors in these pits.
Did a lot of them have tuberculosis there?
When they were talking about the lime being thrown onto them, they said many of us have the disease of the lungs, meaning tuberculosis. And when they throw the lime down on us, it makes us cough and spit blood. And in the, it's of course you can't tell whether someone has tuberculosis or not without an X-ray, but there were, you know, the obvious signs of you know, the chest seemed to be sort of caved in, people were emaciated, were skinny, you know, just no flesh on their bones. A lot of people you would see coughing. And many, you know, many of them brought it up that they had tuberculosis. For example, in the tiger cages or tiger pits, there was no sunshine going into these cages, so that such things as tuberculosis would spread much faster. There seemed to be there, for example, particularly in the women's cages, there seemed to be no attempt to separate the sick from the healthy, and the women who were sick, some of them very badly sick, would be just lying on the floor in the pit, and other women would be fanning them with little rags of cloth that they had gathered together to make them feel better.
Were there any photographs taken?
Yes, Tom Harkin, the congressional aide, took photographs. We had been asked not to take photographs. We complied with this. The three of us complied with it all the way through. I complied with it because I was there, you know, more or less as an interpreter and as a person who knew something about the setup of prisons and so on. And also because Mr. Walton, the head of the prisons, was very angry that I had gone in the first place. I have written an earlier report about some of the prisons that I had visited, and also about torture prisons that I had met, and he was very upset by this. Harkin, the congressional aide who accompanied us, did not take pictures until we got into the tiger cages. And then, you know, it's the kind of situation it's unbelievable in many ways, you know, to see the people down in these pits reaching up with their arms, you know, their hands open and pointing at their mouths and this sort of thing. And he started to take pictures. And as we came down from the men's cages, where we were standing looking down on them and Tom had been taking pictures, Tom was asked, was told that he was not supposed to take these pictures. that an agreement had been made not to take pictures inside the prison. And Tom said, well, you know, I felt that this was the kind of situation that could be only recorded on film. It's an almost an impossible situation to describe the looks on the people's faces and so on. So that in honesty to our own report and so on, I felt that I had to take the pictures. They said, well, you have to give the film to us. This was both the U.S. Public Safety Advisor and the director of the prison. Tom then said, well, this is the property of the U.S. Congress. You can confiscate it, but you will not be confiscating it from me. You will be confiscating it from the United States House of Representatives. Well, anyway, this worked. They did not take his film. And so he has pictures. It was rather dark inside the cages and so on. I don't know how the pictures will come out. But he did take pictures.
Was he allowed to continue taking pictures after that?
Yes. It's sort of... the prison administrator sort of lost control almost, because the prisoners were all shouting, stop at our cage, hear what has happened to us. We would stop and they would tell us their experiences. And they were all saying about the same thing. So once we had seen, you know, a few of the cages, seeing more was only just adding more of, please give us some water, please give us some food. We are sick and we don't have any medicine. And there would be other, you know, incidences, you know, sort of, you know, in terms of how old they were, where they had come from, you know, and this sort of thing, so that we got a general picture.
Were you able to get any names and so on?
This was the one thing that none of the prisoners would do. They would not tell us their name. I've talked with some prisoners since I got back and asked, you know, why is it that the prisoners won't give their name? And the reason, according to the prisoners who are outside, is that they're afraid that we might try to contact their parents and that this would cause difficulty for their parents. They're afraid that we might be followed and that the secret police would see us going to the parent of one of these people, and then this would cause difficulties for their parents. I don't remember whether I mentioned at the beginning of our talk that we had asked to see the six names of people, six specific people. When we finished our trip around the prison, and particularly the tiger cages, we then asked again whether a message had been received by the Ministry of Interior. They said, no, we have not received any message. One of my present concerns is what will happen to the six individuals. We have notified the U.S. Embassy, the congressman did. We have talked with the Vietnamese, the chairman of the Interior Committee in the Vietnamese House of Representatives. We hope that there will be some way that we can find out and get word, you know, as to whether something has happened. The other thing, of course, is, you know, as we walked up and down the aisle of the tiger cages, everybody was speaking out, you know, what will happen to them once we've left. The tiger cages are something which have existed, you know, for a long, long time. However, since the end of the French Indochina War, no one has visited them. That is, no one from the outside. So that the knowledge of the existence of the cages and the knowledge of what goes on inside the cages, there's just been a blank. There's been a wall there. We hope that the fact that people have gone in and seen them and that it is now known, and my reason, of course, for talking to you right now is so that, as you know and as other people know, It puts much more pressure and responsibility onto the government to clean up the horrible mess in these pits.
This is WBAI listener-sponsored radio in New York City.
So that and this the prisoners themselves seem to feel very much this way. You know, I asked them. I said, "Well, what will happen to you when we leave?" And they said, "We will be beaten." But that is unimportant. We are beaten all of the time anyway. We have to take a chance that you're not secret police, that you really are a congressional committee, and that you really will speak the truth when you leave. This is the only chance we have. If we stay here, we'll just die here. So somehow we've got to get word out to the outside world about what this looks like inside these cages, so that people can raise their voices, so that as people know about it, then you know, they're opened. You know, this is the thing that they were concerned about, is that that the world know about the existence of the cages, so that the government could not continue the repression of people within the cages. Also, so that the government and the guards and the special prisoner guards, that is, people who were prisoners before and made guards, would know that the world was watching what they were doing. According to the prisoners, and now I'm referring to prisoners that I've talked with on the outside, that the border guards, the people who are prisoners and are given their special prisoners, do beat the prisoners. They're the most vicious of the ones.
They beat them in the tiger cages as well.
They beat them. They have a long stick that they poke them with from on top. Sometimes they go into the cages, and particularly when the prisoners were shackled, this according to prisoners, and they beat like the bottoms of the feet, which are the most sensitive part, and they beat that a lot. The bottom of the feet.
Did the AID officials who were there, you said one of them went into the tiger cages with you, did they say anything to you afterwards?
Yeah, they were very angry that we had gone in to see the cages. I'm concerned because their reaction to the trip was not one of concern about the people in the cages. It was one of anger that we had asserted ourselves so much as to almost force our way through that little door and then continue and just walk up and into the tiger cage or above the cages and look down, you know, at the prisoners, and then talk to to these people. They said, for example, Mr. Walton said that we were being sneaky and unethical. He said in the beginning, you know, that he thought that we were, the whole trip was, you know, above board. And then he found, and he was very angry. He felt that we had gone with the specific purpose of finding the tiger cages. And, you know, this is true. We went, one of the specific purposes that we had in going was to find out whether these cages existed, and whether the conditions that people have been talking about for the last couple of years, whether this was true. From my observation, it is true. The tiger cages do exist. The people do show marks of being hit and that sort of thing. The people are skinny, show obvious lack of food. And my concern is that our top advisor in the field of criminology and penology and so on was more, he said, for example, he said that you're basing your whole comments and your whole visit here is being based on what is happening to 400 or 500 people. when there are almost 10,000 people in the prison? Why don't you try to find out more about what is happening to the majority of the prisoners? Well, you know, I think that in a situation like this, when you've got a large number, you know, I consider 400 or 500 people living in tiger cages or pits, whatever you want to call them, a very sad and serious thing. I mean, this is tragic. But anyway, I got no indication from his attitude towards the cages that he was going to try to do anything to improve the situation. I got no indication from him that he was upset by the existence of the cages. We asked him if he knew about the cages. Earlier he said he didn't know about them, but then later he said that he knew about the existence of the cages, but that he had never seen the cages. I think that the prison advisor, Mr. Berkeley, was more concerned than was his boss, Mr. Walton. Unfortunately, it's Mr. Walton who's up at the top, you know, making the overall decision, you know, about aid and the person who has the power to bring about change in that situation.
Don Luce's story of Consun Island was first sent to the wire services by Michael Morrow of Dispatch News Service. After interviewing Don Luce about his trip to Consun, Morrow talked to Frank Walton, head of the United States Agency for International Development, Division of Public Safety, who had gone with the congressional team to Consun. Walton told Morrow that the tiger cages existed, but that they were not the hell holes described by the delegation. Quote, they are close confinement cells, similar to those at San Quentin, he told Morrow. The cells were clean, and the guards have no weapons. Walton also said that, quote, the prisoners looked healthy, and that eye diseases were no more a problem at Consun than in the rest of Vietnam. Walton did admit malaria was a problem at the prison. He also said, quote, that lime is apparently used as an alternative to the tear gas used in U.S. prisons to quiet prisoners, unquote. Walton stressed to Morrow that the prison was used for the detention of hardcore communists and gave Morrow a fact sheet on Consun stressing this point. Reaction to Morrow's interview and the disclosure of the trip to Consun was swift. The U.S. Embassy in Saigon told Pacifica Radio that Mr. Walton was now restricted from speaking to reporters and that the embassy would grant no interviews with senior embassy officials who are now handling the matter. The American government gives close to $500,000 a year in aid to the South Vietnamese prison system under AID's public safety program. The program includes an advisory program of 5 civilians and 7 military personnel who work as liaison with South Vietnamese prison officials. There is no question that these American officials are fully aware of the conditions at Consun, but the embassy's only comment on conditions at Consun is the following terse press release, quote, the U.S. mission is aware of the shortcomings in the correction program here in Vietnam. Our advisory effort and assistance are designed to help the Vietnamese government to the extent possible we can to improve their system as rapidly and completely as possible, unquote. The tiger cages of Consun, however, are only one example of the horrible repression used by South Vietnamese police against their political opponents. Don Luce has been interviewing students and documenting the use of torture on students by the police for some months. A recent student report on these tortures has been widely reported in the Vietnamese press. Yet no American journalists have written this story, with the exception of Dispatch News Service, because, as one CBS newsman told me this week, quote, torture is nothing new in Vietnam, unquote. Perhaps not, but the practices of a government which the United States continues to support deserve to be reported and re-reported. Last week, I spoke with several of the South Vietnamese students who have been tortured and incarcerated in Con Son prison. The students are very afraid to speak to American reporters and have not granted these interviews before, except to dispatch news service. They fear the government will arrest them again as a result of the interviews. None of the students speak English, and so the interview, conducted at a new center for the Saigon University Student Union, was conducted in French. The following segment is the first minute of the interview, followed by a description by Don Luce in English of the same student's stories.
Maintenant, nous allons vous exposer les tortures, premièrement, les tortures. Deuxièmement, les conditions d'emprisonnement. Les conditions d'emprisonnement dans les différents camps, les camps de concentration, les camps de Tihua, les camps de Boudic, les camps de Tangier, et puis le camp de Con Son. Monsieur Cheng Ba, Monsieur Yuan Tan Tong, étudiant de Yuan Tan Tong, il est prisonnier pendant environ 2 ans dans la prison de Con Son. Monsieur Cheng Ba Long, étudiant Cheng Ba Long, il est emprisonné. Et puis il est emprisonné presque pendant 2 ans dans la prison de Con Son. Et moi aussi, étudiant de la faculté de pédagogie. Et je suis obligé de vivre dans la prison de Con Son.
The most moving and terrible part of this interview was a description by a young Vietnamese woman, whom I will call Mai, of her torture by Vietnamese police. Mai is an incredibly delicate, frail woman of 29 who was arrested recently with her husband. She is so delicate, she looks as if she might break if she were struck. The worst part of her torture, she said through her Vietnamese interpreter, was that the police first tortured her in front of her husband to force him to sign a paper saying he was a communist, and then tortured him in front of her. Her voice is steady when she speaks. The only anger is expressed by her Vietnamese friend, whose tone in French becomes harsh when he describes the tortures. Only her hands tremble when she holds them out to show the scarred nails where pins were pushed under them. The following is a description by Don Luce in English of the stories of the same students that have been told to him over many hours of sad talk.
You've also written some articles recently about students being tortured. Could you describe some of the interviews that you did with students?
Yeah, well, particularly at the beginning of this year, there were a lot of students arrested. And then rumors began to develop that some of these students were being tortured. Then later, Tin San Morning News newspaper printed a very complete report saying who had been tortured, how they had been tortured, this sort of thing. They talked about the water treatment, pumping water into the stomach and the electrodes and this sort of thing. Well, then some of the students were brought to the court for trial. And as they came to court, it was a very, sort of pathetic scene of students trying to help other students, some of the students not being able to walk, and so on. Well, the government released 10 of these students. These students were taken to the College of Agriculture. I went and talked to them at the College of Agriculture. They were lying out on the science laboratory on the sort of science benches. And again, you can see, some obvious things such as blackened fingernails. Some of the girls claim that they have been tortured while they are naked in front of several other policemen who cheer at spectacular kinds of torture. This includes forcing beer bottles, Coke bottles, live eels up the vagina, comments on. They also talk about the what they call the airplane ride, where someone's hands are tied behind them and they're pulled up by the by the hands, you know, which are tied in back of them, and then maybe beaten in the stomach or had cigarettes extinguished in the stomach, this sort of thing.
Some of the students, the Vietnamese students, have written a report about the condition in the prisons. Could you describe the report?
Yeah, this is quite a long report. It's quite, from my observation of the prison after, it's quite a mild report in terms of what I saw. The students, five students, have been released after there was a great deal of demonstrating and pressure and that sort of thing for release of prisoners on the part of Vietnamese students. They interpret the release of the five people as a way to try to appease the student movement. It may also be that, as I think has happened in the past, that the government hoped that by releasing people who had been tortured, who had lived in pretty bad conditions, that this would scare the majority of the people who are demonstrating.
What was the reaction of the government or the assembly to this report?
The National Assembly, and particularly the chairman of the Interior Committee and the members of the Interior Committee, received the students, listened to their report, I think, and I have talked with the chairman of the Interior Committee. He's very deeply concerned about what is going on in the prisons, feels that, but also feels helpless to really raise his voice very much. On this past Saturday night, three or four days ago, there was a large meeting of people, of students and of parents of students, where the students described their experiences in the prison. One of the saddest things was to listen to mothers talk about their sons, one mother got up and said, "My son was arrested in May 1968. He was put in jail for 2 years. 2 years have now passed. I don't know whether my son is alive or dead. I beg all of you to try to help get my son out of jail."
The South Vietnamese government has not released all the names of either the older prisoners or of the students, have they?
To my knowledge, no. I'm sure there's. I don't know of any way of getting the list of names. But nobody even knows how many there are. At the end of 1969, the Ministry of the Interior and Judiciary subcommittees of the House announced that 50,000 people were being held without trial. This is under the entry law, the law that allows the government to hold people up to 2 years without trial. So here's 50,000 people which are held without trial.
What's the charge, essentially? What's the wording of the charge that they're held under?
That they're endangering the national security. You know, it's just a very broad term, endangering the national security, and which means that they can put all sorts of people, you know, under this category. You know, it can be even personal animosities. It can be mistake. Many of the people that I talked with at Kanchan Island were people that had been in since the mid-50s, people that were put there by Ngo Dinh Diem, people that talked about their children, well, they must be 16 years old now, but I don't know what they're, you know, if they're alive even, you know, this kind of situation.
What are most of these students arrested for? I mean, how would you describe some of the demonstrations that have been held recently?
Well, the demands of the students have generally been, first of all, autonomy for the university. They say that the university professors should have the right to choose the deans of the university rather than the government. They talk about the the end, that the students should be, if they are arrested, should be tried by civilian courts rather than military courts. One of the earlier demands that many of these people who are at Konsan Island right now was that they were very upset when the government passed a law saying that if you reached 19 before you had your high school degree, you would be automatically drafted into the army. This is, you know, an anti-poor man's law.